Issue 21, The Further Complexities of Intimacy. While I was growing up, my family maintained a house in the northwestern part of the state on the largest of the bodies of water known as Finger Lakes. It was intended principally as a summer residence, and occasionally it even served this function, but more often it was rented out to strangers because my father liked to travel a good deal. You might say he had a passion for it. Moreover, he wanted his family to participate in his passion, and so we dutifully accompanied, regardless of our inclinations. My sisters gradually became disaffected with this lifestyle and with the one who imposed it upon them. My mother became exhausted, in fact, extinguished. Though younger than my father by some years, she passed away well before him. I remain today the only loyal sibling, unable either through an excess of nobility or stupidity to surrender the filial piety that binds me even now to this house, this past, this in every sense singular parent, my father, who it seems after so many years of nearly nomadic existence has finally cultivated a yen for stasis, contemplation, and has chosen to occupy in his retirement the house in which I cannot honestly say I was raised. I often think some horizontal metaphor would be more accurately descriptive of the widely disseminated influences of my formative years. This is, however, the house in which I might have grown up, and strangely elicits, admittedly elliptically, an even greater poignancy. It is customary, is it not, in times of loss or instability, to cultivate an intimacy with memories. In these instances, we tend to create structures that reinforce familiarity, but with my father, this is not the case. He seems, in fact, quite awkward with the consequences of what he has created or adopted. He claims that the particular shape of this wooden box, the angle at which it meets the earth, the vast window that looks onto the lake, these things create in the house an odd emotion, and thus create for him disconcerting sensations. I too am somewhat sensitive to ambience and want to ease his awkwardness if I have the means to do so. For instance, I have offered to support the less than solid foundation, like Atlas supporting the world. True, I possess more stamina than strength, and the grand rhetoric of generosity is largely gesture. But on a more pragmatic plane, I also offer regularly to paint, to caulk, to scrape, or spackle, sweep, or scrub. But no, he says, I must not trouble. Besides, it is obvious that these cosmetic imperfections are but symptoms of the monumental underlying problems that beset these modest-appearing structure. Might I then catch the door before it makes the sound he cares so little for, to offer an appendage as a hinge of sorts? I'd stay the door with hand or foot before it had a chance to slam, for many years of ballet are behind me. All of his children were trained in one or another of the arts, and the grace I learned is evident only in the most humble circumstance, standing waiting for a train, for instance. Note my posture, bearing, the drama of my silhouette as I lean against a pillar just outside the station. This otherwise unnoticed grace is often commented upon by strangers, though never by my father, who takes grace, at least mine, for granted. There are worse sins, I tell my sisters, who harp on his neglect, than overlooking admirable attributes. Those closest to us often are most blind. It does not really constitute transgression. The house, however, is another matter, conforming to no law with which I am acquainted, a kind of wood box, slightly askew, not salt box, neither hat nor shoe, a leaning tower without a piece's dignity, haphazard, squat, and deep within, a strange conglomerate of spaces extending from cellar to attic, each appearing infinite, made separate instead of connected by a series of steps, altogether unfinished, yet cramped. He would finish the basement, he always said, so I and my sisters could play, and also the attic to use as his study, but we were, as family, too transient to allow feasibility of any long-term project, still less likely now to be considered by he who communes incessantly with infinity. He seems to revel in or be resigned, at any rate, to rawness of the space. Nearly one entire wall is glass, and the body of water, viewed through the former's transparency, often gives the appearance of glass. And across the former, my father, in a perplexingly unamphibious manner, swims, propels himself against its smooth surface, and I follow him anxiously, as if he were child and I powerless but nonetheless protective parent, utterly transfixed by his trajectory, for I have no notion whatsoever why he does not fall. Fortunately, no one passes outside, for no one ever visits, because it might be shocking to behold the manner in which his arms and legs work the surface as if he were another sort of creature entirely, lacking only wings, or perform some very private, indeed primordial, function publicly, groping with the body as if entire corpus, undifferentiated, supplanted, separate trunk and limbs. Etiquette would not permit my asking if he built the house himself. I know I should know. It should be obvious from his remarks and its marked features. Who am I to say, having been born last, the youngest of my sisters? It certainly bears the stamp of his originality. Its vision I uphold, not roof and walls. I can recall his saying, bellowing from his pulpit drafting table. Later in his life, he ceased to plan, declaring mutiny from his profession, accusing it of treachery. Should I then bracket all my dreams and only build to code, to code, to code? Indeed, I find it hard to picture saw or hammer in his hand.